download at Duolingo.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loria. Coming up today, we're going to talk about the state of the nation's infrastructure, and later on, we'll open up the phone lines. There's a bipartisan effort to do more to protect and preserve and strengthen the nation's infrastructure. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, six listener phone calls about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we were talking about guns in schools and the recently passed legislation in Tallahassee that would allow teachers to voluntarily arm themselves with guns if school districts approve. Here's what several listeners had to say following yesterday's show.
This is Pete from North Lakeland, and I have a major comment on something that I just heard. It's blowing my mind. This woman who said she wanted to carry a firearm in class to intimidate the children, well, let me tell you a couple things about that. Either this woman is drinking bong water, or she needs to take that firearm and stick it where the sun doesn't shine, because she's an idiot. Thank you, sir, for your time. God love you guys at WNF. I appreciate you more than you know.
My name is Elijah. I just wanted to respond to one of your callers from the Tuesday show. Nona, I think, is wrong if she thinks that children need to be afraid of their teachers. I think children need to have fun at school. My daughter does. She loves her school. And she also needs to feel safe, whether it's from the teacher or, you know, anyone else. And I think the caller, Nona, who says she was a teacher, was a little off touch with, I think, what young children need in their education.
Yes, I was calling about your program yesterday. There is a lot of gun boxes on the market that operate by fingerprints. So there's no locks, no keys, about the size of a shoebox, or just to let you know. Thank you.
This is John in Bradenton. I was listening to the show about weapons in the classroom. If we ever get to the point where classrooms and schools are safe because of all the weapons that are being used there, don't you feel like probably the next thing the disgruntled person will do will go to the shopping mall and just shoot people there, whether they're adults or children? They want to get their name out into the public and that 15 minutes of fame. I also think that the mental health issue is the preeminent thing that we should be looking at. Hey, great show. Glad you're back.
This is Bruce from St. Pete. I graduated in 72, and the biggest thing we had to fear was, you know, maybe there'd be, everybody said, oh, there's going to be a fight after school, you know, and everybody went out there, and, you know, there's two guys usually arguing, and that's about it. It seems like we didn't even have this conversation about guns in school and all these shootings until the 2000s or later. I'm a put it kind of on President Bush, the terror, axis of evil, all this. You know, the war does come home. All wars come home eventually. And we've been fighting this war for how many years now? And now we have all these guns. Everybody's got to have a gun. What has happened to our society?
Yes, one thing I was noticing when we were talking about what to do about schools is we're only considering schools, and when you consider the churches and synagogues and other places that are also being targeted, not necessarily by students, but by other people with guns. A thing about arming teachers, I taught for many years in a preschool classroom, and the last thing I would want to have is a gun. My first job would not to be to grab a gun to protect my students. They have a sense about something going wrong. The older ones will figure it out and be petrified. The younger ones will pester you until you tell them what's going on. So to think that a teacher can all of a sudden, you know, forget her classroom role, his or her classroom role, and become an armed shooter is beyond expectation. I also don't agree with this thing about, yeah, our kids need to be protected, and you're going to do it. I don't have a gun. I've never had a gun. I never will have a gun. The worst thing we have in our house is a sawed-off Louisville Slugger. I will not have a gun. If you're going to force teachers to be armed, does that mean they have to be certified? Does it mean they have to be recertified and give up even more of their personal time to go and retain this gun certification? And some people who are thinking it's a great idea for teachers to be armed. Before you think about doing it, if you're a teacher and you're even considering this, go to a gun range. Have them give you a Glock and try and pull that trigger. Try and aim it and hit what you're aiming at. Try and load a magazine for a Glock.
This is Jim from St. Pete again. When I called in favor of having the option of teachers having the ability to defend themselves and children in their classroom, you immediately went to the idea that the teacher, that is something that may give them a better chance to surviving a bad situation, to being someone that has a larger threat than the person that came to shoot the place up. Kind of ridiculous. When I suggested that the gun would be kept in a fixed, locked box somewhere in the classroom, he poo-pooed that down because maybe one of the students would get into the box and start killing the other kids or something. Or maybe it would take too long to unlock the gun before the shooter came to the door. I guess you'd think that they just show up everywhere at one time, but that doesn't happen. You know, said that having locked bulletproof doors and windows would be a better idea. I could argue with that somewhat. I think it'd be a good idea, but I still prefer of having both a locked door and a gun in my hand between me and a shooter. Make a couple assumptions of my own. One, I assume you have no experience with gun safes. Two, you believe that teachers, if they had a gun in their hand, would turn from something that wants to teach children, turns them into somebody that wants to kill kids. Have a good one.
Lots of listener comments about yesterday's program, the portion that we were talking about arming teachers in schools around Florida. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. This is Radioactivity. Right now, we're going to talk about National Infrastructure Week. It starts today, and we're going to meet two guests right now. Larry Willis is the president of the Transportation Trades Department at the AFL-CIO. And Ed Mortimer is Vice President for Transportation and Infrastructure at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I spoke with both of them this morning. They're in Washington, D.C. They're part of a bipartisan effort to make a crucial investment in our nation's various infrastructure systems a priority. They're trying to get something moving in Washington. And I spoke with Larry Willis and Edward Mortimer earlier today. Larry and Ed, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here. Is it fair to say that this is, are you guys strange bedfellows? We've got the Chamber of Commerce and we've got organized labor. Is it rare that you guys work together?
Well, I don't know about how rare, but look, the fact that we are coming together on this and have for several years, I think gives you some indication of the scope that both business and labor see as a problem here. We have been underinvesting in our nation's transportation system and our broader infrastructure needs for too long. We know it is hurting workers. It is placing a tremendous cost on our members who are also commuters. Ed can talk about the impact on business and what he sees, but that's why we've been involved in this debate. We know that investing in infrastructure and transportation will create jobs immediately. We know it leaves behind really good operating jobs and maintenance jobs and manufacturing jobs. And we think on policy solutions and pay-fors, there are places that we can agree and hopefully get elected leaders to agree as well.
Any idea how big the hole is? How far behind are we in keeping up with what our infrastructure should be? How many billions or trillions of dollars are we behind?
Well, Rob, the American Society of Civil Engineers basically says over the next 10 years, we have a $2 trillion deficit in a variety of asset classes of infrastructure. So that's not just roads and bridges, but also our water systems, our energy sources. And we believe we have a historic opportunity here in Washington. President Trump ran on infrastructure. We have Democrats who've met with the president who've come together and saying they want to try to do an infrastructure modernization bill at a $2 trillion level. It's going to take a variety of funding and financing sources to get there, but we really believe there's momentum to get something done. In spite of all the partisanship that you see in Washington and in state houses around the country, this is an issue that if business and labor come together on this, there's no reason Democrats and Republicans can't do something that benefits every single American. If we modernize our infrastructure, we're left with assets that benefit Americans for years and years to come. And I think our greatest challenge is America had the greatest infrastructure in the world, but it was built 60 to 100 years ago. And we're now falling behind other countries. And so we believe now there's a historic opportunity. If the federal government can step up and do its part, We believe states like Florida will do their part as well, because again, these are a shared partnership between the federal government, state, and local. It's the federal government that hasn't done anything. We haven't raised a federal fuel tax in 26 years. So we cannot modernize our system with a 1993 funding source. And so we're committed to stand behind elected leaders to say now's the time to act, and we're going to stand behind you to make these tough decisions, because these decisions are what we expect government to do. There are a lot of things government shouldn't be doing. This is an area where they have to act. They have to show leadership. And we believe that Infrastructure Week highlights the fact that infrastructure is critical to our quality of life, to our economy, and we're committed to stand behind elected leaders to make these choices. And they do it this year. The longer we wait, the cost of inaction is actually more than the cost of action.
Our guests are Edward Mortimer, Vice President for Transportation and Infrastructure at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Larry Willis, President of the Transportation Trades Department at the AFL-CIO. So is the idea to raise the fuel tax, is that the way you'd pay for it? And there is this anti-tax feeling up there, especially in the U.S. Senate, and I think even President Trump has that feeling. Is the fuel tax the way to pay for it?
Well, it is important to remember that the federal fuel tax is what goes into the highway trust fund that is supposed to be used or is used for highways and bridges and transit systems, commuter rail. We have not raised that. That has not gone up one iota in 26 years. And obviously the needs of our system, they've expanded tremendously in that time frame. We have obviously higher construction costs, higher operating costs, And there's less revenue coming in because people are using more fuel-efficient vehicles. So we have to start with that on the surface transportation side. And look, I'm from the labor movement. We don't, generally like these type of taxes. But quite frankly, our members are already spending up to $1,400 every year being stuck in, wasted fuel, car repairs that are directly related to bad roads that they have to drive on every day, missed appointments because the public bus doesn't get there on time. So, we are, that's why we're fighting so hard for this.
Yeah, down here our problem are potholes, bridges that need to be repaired or expanded, leaking sewer pipes, a big problem down here, leaking water pipes. Even, some of the airports here in Florida need to be upgraded. Would all that be covered by infrastructure and increased spending on infrastructure?
Absolutely. You'd have to look at the system in its totality. And so we have to have a multimodal system, so it's not just roads and bridges, transit. Our waterways. We also know that if we're modernizing the system, we're dealing with new climate situations, so rising water levels, increased natural disasters. And so I think a part of this federal effort is to make sure that as we modernize our infrastructure, we use innovation and technology to make sure we build it to last. And so resiliency is going to be a key part of this infrastructure package
to make sure
that we're able to handle changing environmental conditions. And we really think there's a historic opportunity. It is tough to pay for it. The business community, like labor, doesn't always want government to tax us. But this is one of the few areas that we have to have the federal government lead. As Larry said, it's been 26 years, and you're not going to fix this problem with using a 1993 funding source. So we're committed to work with folks on both sides of the aisle. And again, President Trump and congressional Democrats have come together on a outline of a $2 trillion deal. They're hopefully going to meet next week to figure out a way to pay for it. It's going to be a variety of ways. And again, we're committed to work with them to figure out a way to do this. And so to provide our next generation children and grandchildren an infrastructure they can be proud of.
If you were to look at the U.S. infrastructure and compare it to that of growing nations like China or Western Europe or Japan, how does our infrastructure compare to those other regions of the world?
Well, look, and that's part of the problem. We are the world's top economy, but we are failing when you compare us to our trading partners. Just look at high-speed rail. That's so critical in places in Europe and China. And we have ridiculous debates about whether we're going to fund Amtrak at $1.8 billion versus $2 billion, and having a high-speed rail system in this country that is non-existent. Those are the type of places, look at our nation's ports, and that's, a big issue in Florida, obviously. If we want to have real real commerce and real trade, we've got to dredge our ports deeper. Right now, we collect money every day into something called the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund, but we don't spend it for its intended purposes. And we've got members of Congress that have recently re-engaged on this issue and introduced a bill to fix that problem. But that just gives you an example of something that is a way to pay for identifiable needs that are out there. And investing in seaports is so critical to Florida and the rest of our nation.
Now, I know we're almost out of time, but what should people do if people like this idea of spending more on infrastructure in the U.S. and building up our ports and our roads and our bridges and rail transportation and water and sewer pipes? What should they do?
Well, what they need to do is contact their elected officials and tell them now's the time to act, and that we're going to be willing to stand behind elected leaders to do this. We have a coalition of business and labor, and our website is fasterbettersafer.org. Larry's organization has a website, and he'll tell you that in a minute. But today is a national call-in day that we're asking all of our members to contact their members of Congress and say, enough is enough. The time to act is now.
And TTD, more information on this and other issues that we're working on is ttd.org. And you can find us at Twitter at TTDAFLCIO.
Larry Willis and Ed Mortimer, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Larry Willis, president of the Transportation Trades Department at the AFL-CIO, and Edward Mortimer, vice president for transportation and infrastructure at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And today marks the start of National Infrastructure Week, and you heard how far behind we are, $2 trillion. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can always email us in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. And you can call us at 813-239-9663. Adam writes this regarding infrastructure. He says, I'm so tired of this delusional talk about how the government needs to do something about infrastructure and Republicans and Democrats should just come together and they could do it. Adam goes on to write, they don't seem to understand the fundamental difference. Republicans do not want to pay for any improvements. They will not support a tax. They prefer for private industry to take over and run everything. They do not believe in climate change and building a green infrastructure, writes Adam. All right, so we could talk about infrastructure, or we could talk again about guns in schools. I'm going to introduce some new topics, too. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. I think our phone producers are all away today with a mix of issues, so we'll be taking the phones the old-fashioned way in just a moment. Well, let's take a few phone calls right now. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Hi, caller. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Jay Alexander, or Jay, from St. Petersburg.
Hi, Jay. And what would you like to say?
I would like to talk about the infrastructure and possibly a bill that's in Congress to bring back a program that would help build infrastructure in our parks and recreational areas.
Okay. What bill is that?
H.R. 2358. Sponsored by Marcy Chapter of Ohio, the 21st Century Civilian Conservation Corps Act.
And what would it do?
Okay, we have an infrastructure. The civil engineers every 4 years get together, the American Civil Engineer Society, and they have a vote and to see where our infrastructure is. And for the past 20 years, it's been going from a C, now it's a D plus. And it would cost us about $2 trillion to start the bill. Anyway, the thing would, if we bring back a program like the CCC, it would help with some of the infrastructure and teach unskilled workers, young people, the skills to do the heavy jobs, the heavier jobs, to do the heavy structures like our freeways and bridges. get them started in our parks, doing trails and working on roads, roadways in the park system in our country. We have over 1,000 different state parks across the country that the CCC helped develop back in the 30s. And this is a program that was a New Deal program, but was phased out during World War II because they needed the manpower. The bill is just needs to be dusted off. The act would bring back, would refund this program, just as it needs to be dusted off and modernized.
All right. So your $2 trillion figure agrees with our guest. So, Jay, what's the best thing people can do if they want to see H.R. 235 passed?
Okay. We have 12 members of Congress that have already co-sponsored the bill. We have to get listeners to call in to their members of Congress at the Capitol switchboard or write to them. They could email me. I'll call, email me, find out who their member of Congress is on House.gov, and call them or email them and talk, ask them and urge them to co-sponsor H.R. 2358. And we also need a senator. We need the bill to come up in the U.S. Senate so it could go into both houses. So we are having it in the workforce, not the workforce, the Education and Labor Committee right now. We have 4 members of that committee that have already co-sponsored the bill. And we have 1 member of Congress from Florida that has co-sponsored the bill, and that is Charlie Crist.
All right, and I got the number wrong. It's H.R. 2358, right?
Correct.
All right.
Marcy Kaptur is the sponsor of the bill. She is now the, since the Democrats have taken back the House, she is now the chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee called Water and Energy, and she's in charge of most of the departments that are working in that area.
All right, Jay. Thanks a lot, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So there you have it. Trying to revive the Civilian Conservation Corps that was around in the 1930s and early 1940s that helped the country recover from the Great Depression. John writes this, we are $2 trillion behind. Heck, we just gave half of that to the uber-rich and the corporations. I love the idea of investing in our country instead of subsidizing corporate profits, writes John. And we're going to go back to the phones for a few more minutes and then talk about some other things. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
John from Palmetto.
Hi, John.
Doing, Rob?
Good.
I emailed you one of my columns last in 2016 on this very subject, I'd like to remind everybody that Bernie Sanders, it was the one that first kept throwing this on the table. Besides Ralph Nader, for about 30 years, we kept hitting us with the infrastructure idea of how that's slowly denigrating beneath us. But I think that when people start crying about the state doing this and the government doing that, well, what we have is a lot of capitalists that are nonprofits. You know, a lot of their things are set up, and we have things like Amazon that when we're giving them billions of dollars to try and employ people. But the fact that and on top of that, any Republican and many of the Democrats that complain about what's going on with the tariff with China, they can blame themselves because the Republicans over 20 years moved about 22 million jobs overseas for profit's sake. So, you know, our complaint goes there. But I would just like to, warn people that what they're going to do is bonds. And bonds means that you're taking out we're all taking out our credit card. Not in our lifetime are we going to get that paid off. It's going to go straight to your kids. We need, as Bernie said, and I'll finish with this at the end of my piece. What Bernie said is, I'm going to tell all these giant corporations they're going to bring their businesses back, and they're going to pay for that infrastructure that they haven't been paying for decades. Otherwise, we're going to take them to the fence. You know, we're going to wring them out, and I think that's what they deserve. They have used our infrastructure and everything else, so we got to be careful that, Trump got dragged into the conversation before he was elected. He has no intentions other than getting some trophies with the banks who end up writing these bonds, these trillion-dollar investments that we're all going to pay for. But great subject. Thank you for doing it, sir.
All right.
You need to pay attention to it.
John, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. The U.S. Embassy in Iraq says the State Department has ordered all non-essential, non-emergency government staff to leave the country right away amid escalating tensions between the U.S. and Iran. The alert was published on the embassy's website this morning. It comes after Washington last week said it had detected new and urgent threats from Iran and its proxy forces in the region. But the top British general in the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS says there is not an increased threat from Iranian-backed forces in Iraq or in Syria, despite claims of the contrary. Major General Christopher Gica said this yesterday about whether or not Iran poses a threat in the region.
No, there's been no increased threat from Iranian-backed forces in Iraq and Syria. We're aware of their presence, clearly, and we monitor them along with a whole range of others because that's the environment we're in. There are a range of threats to American and coalition forces in Iraq and Syria. We monitor them all. Iranian-backed forces is clearly one of them. And I'm not going to go into the detail of it, but there are a substantial number of militia groups in Iraq and Syria, and we don't see any increased threat from many of them at this stage.
That's Major General Christopher Gica, Deputy Commander of Operation Inherent Resolve, the coalition responsible for counterterrorism operations against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. He says there's been no increased threat from Iranian-backed forces in Iraq or Syria, and he's taking issue with what the U.S. government is telling us. U.S. Central Command in Tampa rebuked Gica's comments in a statement released late yesterday. Central Command here in Tampa said recent comments from OIR's deputy commander run counter to the identified credible threats available to intelligence from U.S. and allies regarding Iranian-backed forces in the region. So what do you think? Are we headed to war? And is the U.S. spinning this, or what do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And something really unusual happened. Yesterday, the FBI gave a briefing to our governor, Ron DeSantis, about hacking by Russians into the Florida election system. It turns out two Florida counties were hacked by Russia prior to the 2016 elections. Ron DeSantis, our governor, spoke with the FBI yesterday, but he's been sworn to secrecy. So here's just a bit of what we know.
During the 2016 race, former Democratic Senator Bill Nelson warned of a possible Russian hack. His Republican opponent, then-Governor Rick Scott, dismissed the warning as a scare tactic. Now, however, Governor Ron DeSantis says two Florida county election systems were infiltrated by actors affiliated with Russia. DeSantis says the FBI assures him that the voter information they accessed was publicly available and that it didn't affect any outcomes.
Obviously, for me, my main concern is that people go in, they vote, the vote gets counted, and we have a fair result. And so if you look at what they accessed, that would not have been able to do that.
DeSantis also says the previous administration was not notified at the time. I'm Blaze Ganey.
All right. So do you think the FBI should come forward and tell us which counties have been hacked? And do you think that that's the end of the story? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Ruben writes this, remember the duck and cover drills? Well, my kids, 6 and 8, are getting used to having a wacko with gun drill a few times a year in their school. Ruben lives in Lakeland. He says, I think it's ridiculous that we have to put up measures on our lives to justify the gun fetish of others, writes Ruben. Ruben, thank you for that. And let's take some more phone calls. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, Carlos, Tampa, Florida.
Hi, Carlos. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I believe so. Maybe there is, there is something coming up regarding a war against Iran, because a war, it is the survival of the system to start a war. If you look at the history, the recent history, it's like every 5 years, if it's, we are fighting a new war, you know what I mean? That's how we can sell weapons, and that's how the system can survive. I mean, anybody in the right mind you know, has thousands of nuclear, you know, warheads. And it's like Iran, you know, to go against Iran and Iranist threat. Can someone explain to me what kind of threat is it? Someone who has tens of thousands of nuclear heads and someone has none of the above. Can just someone please explain it to me? What is the threat?
Yeah, Iran does not have nuclear weapons, and so far it's not restarted its nuclear program. Iran says that its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes. Even if it restarted it, it wouldn't be, it says, developing nuclear weapons. We'll see. But you're right. I mean, if, we're sitting here in the United States of America. We're mostly in South Florida right now, in Central and South Florida, listening to MNF. Some people are listening around the world, but does anybody feel threatened by Iran? That's a good question.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right, Carlos, thank you. 813-239-9663. And what do you think about Central Command challenging their own commander over in the field about whether or not Iran presents a threat? And do you think that this is another Iraq situation where our government lied us into war in Iraq? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
It's Dan from Tampa.
Hi, Dan. What would you like to say?
Oh, I'd like to do a little public service announcement if I could, Rob. I wanted to remind all those people that think teachers should have guns in the classrooms and to the hard right people to remind them to have their sons or grandsons or nephews go register for the draft because, you know, it's a law. Between the ages of 18 and 25, need to go register for the draft because we may need them.
For what?
Well, I mean, you know, for Iran. I mean, they're, you know, the weapons of mass destruction that they might have that we're going to have to go invade them. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure what you're saying. So saying, you start off with teachers. Yeah, go ahead.
What I'm saying, Rob, is that they want to arm the teachers. Let's go worry about arming their kids to go fight Iran first.
Okay.
You know, because that's what's going to happen here if people don't wake up out there. It's ridiculous that they can't see through the woods here for some reason. We went to Iraq, and we spent I don't know how many trillions of dollars now for nothing.
Yeah, we don't have it for the infrastructure, but we have it for war in Iraq. What would it take? I mean, what would the government have to prove to you to justify a war against Iran, to send those 120,000 troops that the New York Times reported about the other day? What would it take to convince you, you know, that a country, whatever the country is, proposes a threat to you?
For me and my government, I'd have to see some hard film evidence, talk to regular people, not the military brass, but I want to talk to the regular private that's on the ground out there to tell me whether or not this is really happening.
And when the British commander over there who's fighting the war against, you believe him?
I believe him. I don't believe, Rob, what my opinion is he's ramping up for a war, getting into a war so he can get reelected. Kind of like what Bush did the first time.
So it's wag the dog.
Exactly. But I just want everybody to understand, I want their child to be a part of this. If they want this, then have their children be a part of it. I tried to get on to the right show in the morning here to put out that public announcement about it's a law, 18 to 25, it's a law that you have to register for the draft. A lot of people don't even know that, Rob.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Dan, thanks a lot.
So, anyway.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from St. Pete, and my name is Craig Duell.
Hi, Craig. What would you like to say?
Basically, I just want to put a little scenario out there for all these people that feel that, you know, if everybody had a gun, it would be safer. Picture the world is a classroom. If every country had a nuclear weapon, would we feel safer? I don't think so.
Yeah, you think the world would be on a hair trigger?
Oh, yeah, I mean, even if you are, you know, back in the NRA and, you know, and you're heavy into the guns, which I used to hunt and everything when I grew up in Pennsylvania. But I live in Florida now. I have no need to hunt. I can go to a grocery store and buy food. But, you know, I see a lot of these people that back guns heavily, which I have no problem with them. But when they tell me that if everybody had a gun, it would be safer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so if everybody had a nuclear weapon, it clearly would not be safer. Everybody would be on edge.
Exactly. If that's their philosophy, how would they feel if every country had nuclear arsenals? I don't think they would feel safer.
Well, that's a good analogy. Craig, thank
you. Debunk their whole philosophy right there.
Yeah. Craig, thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. So let's take some more phone calls. And I want to bring in a little bit more sound in just a moment. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name's Joe from Tampa.
Hi, Joe. What would you like to say?
I would just like to say, when it comes to war and things like that, there always usually has to be a reason for war. A lot of times, war brings in money. And that's why a lot of times our government does it. With 9/11 and all the other things, you know, they say, oh, it was not, you know. They always blame somebody, and I'm not saying Iraq's not dangerous or anything like that, but at the same time, when you go and mess with people, I mean, they're going to mess back, you know what I mean? And a lot of times when you see wars like this, they always need a reason. Well, your income tax actually pays for the national debt and the army, the military. So that right there is funding the war. So when you put people and 125,000 troops or whatever into war, you're bringing in money and it's bringing in revenue. And we have a major war in this country every maybe 20 years. You know, we were just good at it.
Yeah, you know, I think it does bring in revenue for the military contractors. I think that revenue does come in. But otherwise, we're borrowing money to go to war. I mean, when we went to war in Iraq and we spent trillions of dollars on war in Iraq and, expensive gas stations and expensive air conditioning units and all that stuff that we wasted money on in Afghanistan and Iraq. That was borrowed money. So when we see the people who complain about the federal government borrowing money, we borrow money to go to war. And that money is, you know, we go deeper and deeper in debt every time we have a war, and that's one of the big drivers of the national debt. Yet you don't hear the people in Washington say that. They never point back to the wars, the expensive wars. Back in World War II, we used to say, buy bonds and fund the war. And tax ourselves and fund the war. But now we borrow money to fund the wars.
And also, I would like to say earlier with things on schools, you know what I mean? What do you expect to happen when you take, you know, prayer out of schools? You know what I mean? Say God and, you know, national anthems and all that kind of stuff out of schools. You know, no, there is no standard. You know what I mean? There's no accountability. So kids don't know what to do. So, you know.
Well, but isn't that the job of the parents to teach kids morality?
Exactly.
I mean, it's the job of the parents, not the schools as much. I mean, the schools should teach things like ethics, maybe, but certainly religion is up to the parents. I mean, all right. Joe, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. David writes this. He says, I call BS and the so-called credible threats regarding Iran. Perhaps credible threats is the new weapons of mass destruction. And it's being used as an illegitimate excuse for war, writes David. Jeff in Port Richey says, it turns out that the two counties that were hacked voted blue. That will be the end of the story. Should they turn out to have voted red, though, naturally, we'll have to invalidate the entire election and hand it to the intended winner, writes Jeff. The third possibility would be that one county was red, the other was blue, in which case we should ignore the story but nullify the election. That's Jeff in Newport Richey. I think whether the counties are blue or red, I think we should find out what the hacking involved. And I don't just buy the story that the governor should shut up and that's the end of the story. I think the governor owes it to the people of Florida to tell us what happened. And he shouldn't sign a non-disclosure agreement with the FBI. I think that is not what we pay the governor for. He's on the public salary. And he should provide information to us so that we can have confidence that the next election and future elections are not hacked. That's what I think. So I don't agree with Jeff. It's whether it's a red county or a blue county, we should get to the bottom of it. I want to play you something that happened just within the last few days. This is very interesting. This happened in South Florida, not too far from us. This is a man had gone to a comedy club just the other day, and he was very angry at what was being said at the comedy club. And he was so angry he called 9/11. So this guy had gone to the Off the Hook Comedy Club in Naples this month when there was a comedian on the stage, Ahmed Ahmed, and he was making jokes about the Middle East, and the audience member was so angry he called 9/11, and this comes to us from WBBH News in Fort Myers. Here's what the 9/11 caller said.
Collier County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Cormier. This line is recorded. How may I help you?
Hi. I don't know if I have the right department, but last evening I went to a comedy show, and the comedy show is happening again tonight at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
At Off the Hook.
Yep.
On Pine Ridge Road. Are you familiar with that?
I am, yeah.
Okay. There was a comedian. He's, his name is Ahmed Ahmed. And he's, you know, Middle Eastern.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing he said when he got out on the stage was, okay, how many Middle Eastern people do we have here? And a whole bunch of people raised their hand.
Uh-huh.
I guess they went to see him because he was Middle Eastern.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you hear the name Ahmed Ahmed.
Right.
I guess. So, and there weren't a lot of people there, I guess, because of the name.
Uh-huh.
I went because I got free tickets.
Okay.
And as the people raised their names, they said, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Iraq. I'm from Iran. I'm from Pakistan. I'm from here. I'm from there. He said, that's great. He said, we could organize our own little terrorist organization.
Oh.
And I don't think that was right.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it really bothered me.
Yeah, I understand that in this environment.
And I yelled out, yeah, and the paddy wagon's going to be outside to get all of you.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. Is that something that should not be said?
I don't know. I'm not a certified deputy, so I don't know the law on it. But I can send a deputy out there if you'd like, and maybe they can talk with them and see, you know, what that was about.
Because there's another show at 7 o'clock. I don't know if he's going to say it again.
Yeah.
You know, there's a total of five shows. No, five shows. Two on Friday, two on Saturday. Yeah, five shows. So, I don't know if he's going to say it again, but I just thought it was terrible. My wife and I looked at each other, and we felt very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I understand that. Like I said, I could send somebody out there tonight and have them see what's going on.
Okay. Maybe listen in and see if he says something like that.
Yeah, would you like anyone to contact you with an outcome or anything?
Well, I wouldn't want my name used.
You don't have to.
You know, I wouldn't want
anonymous
anybody. I wouldn't want my name told to the comedy club at all, because
okay.
I go there all the time.
Yeah, well, then I'll just leave it anonymous then, and they'll just address it and see if it's something they need to handle, then they will.
Thank you.
Okay.
Because they start at 7, and
okay.
He comes on a little later, because they have two other comedians.
Okay, I'll let them know. All right, appreciate
it. I was debating on whether I should call or not.
Yeah, I understand.
I just think it's terrible.
Well, it's bothering you, you know.
Yeah.
It's better to check it out.
There are about 25, you know, Muslims there.
Okay.
So.
All right, well, we'll have them check it out, okay?
All right,
thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right, so
is your yard sinking?
So that's a 9/11 call. Down in Naples to the 9/11 operator down there, a guy had gone out to a comedy club and a Muslim comedian was making jokes about the stereotype of Muslims being involved in terrorism. And what happens, he shows his humor impairment, I guess. Just wild that the guy had just no clue that this was a joke. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm Rob Loria. Thanks for tuning in. We'll take some more phone calls right now. 813-239-9663. Let's take this call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Caller? Uh-oh. Could be our phones are down. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? All right, let me put this person on hold. Could be our, I noticed our computers just went down just at the same time. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, am I on here?
Yeah, what's your name?
Clark from Ybor City.
Clark?
Yeah.
All right, Clark, thanks a lot for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to say something, but I have an ancillary point to start with. I want to volunteer at WMNF, and you said you need phone producers today, so I'd like to know how to get on your email list to become a volunteer, or should I just stop by the office and put my list? I'd love to help your show. You're the reason, you and Dan Roos and Florida Folk are the reason I contribute to WMNF, and so very excited that you're back.
Oh, that's
I'd
great.
I'd love to help out.
Well, the best way to help out is just to send an email into WMNF at WMNF.org. Say, tell us you'd like to help out. We have new volunteer meetings every month, and
okay.
You can come down and do it that way. And if you want, you can come by during business hours and take a quick tour of the station and stop by at the front desk and give us your name and your phone number and tell us you want to volunteer.
Okay. The reason I'm calling in is the hacking. I just think it's outrageous that they can't even identify the two counties. You know, if they're trying to protect an investigation into who is doing it by not saying we're so close, we know the two counties. Well, they're saying two counties in Florida. They're already cluing in whoever those folks are, and I hope, or I urge them, I don't know if that's Tampa, I'm Tampa Green, I don't know if the Tampa Green Party can sue them, but the League of Women Voters should be, you know, all over that issue and suing them up in Tallahassee to release that information. This is an outrage. You know, the suffragettes didn't go out there and, you know, go to jail to get the right to vote, to have, you know, it kept secret kept information secret about actual hacking into voting. So that was it. I just wanted to chime in on that.
Yeah, it would seem that the hackers would know which counties they got into. It's only the us poor Floridians that don't know. All right, Clark.
All right, bye.
Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And here's another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what city are you calling from?
Hey, this is Chuck in Tampa.
Hi, Chuck. What would you like to say?
Well, as far as the hacking that happened here in Florida, I think they said that someone clicked on it. They basically, it was a phishing deal. I mean, it didn't seem like that big of a deal, but I mean,
why the secrecy?
We do have to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, why the secrecy if it's not a big deal?
I agree. I think the big story is William Barr hiring that prosecutor to look into spying on the Trump campaign, and basically, now everything's kind of coming to light that what Donald Trump said was true. You know, the whole Russia hoax and...
Yeah, well, you know, Chuck, as you know, there's two investigations. Barr just created his own investigation, and there's an inspector general's investigation into how this whole Russian thing began. So there are two investigations going on. We reported it heavily earlier this week, yesterday, when it began. News came out from Washington, and NPR has been reporting it for 2 days. So we'll see. We don't know where it's going to go. I mean, it could be that Hillary Clinton is at the heart of it all, which I doubt, or it could be that there were legitimate reasons to think that Russia was trying to get involved in our campaign last year. We know that, or in 2016, rather. We know that the Trump campaign provided, people within the Trump campaign provided information to the Russians, polling information, polling data, which is some of the most valuable information that a politician has, provided that information to the Russians to try to undermine the Democrats in 2016. We'll see where it goes. I mean, you know, it's just the beginning of the investigation. The Inspector General's investigation, I think, is about winding up, so we'll find out soon.
Yeah, I said nothing about Hillary Clinton. I'm talking about actually setting up the Trump campaign like this whole Russia thing being a setup. I mean, that this is a criminal prosecutor now. This is going to probably go in front of a grand jury, and that Horowitz report, that's probably going to come down the pike with maybe this week or next week, and that's going to be the real. That's going to be the real stone that tells all. Right.
All right. Well, we'll see where it goes.
That's a bigger story than a couple of, you know.
Well, just keep in mind, Chuck, we're waiting for the results of the investigation. Let's see where the investigation goes. It may go your way. It may go another way. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
How are you doing?
Good. What's your name and where are you calling from? And your name is?
Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne. Thanks for calling in. So what would you like to say?
Well, basically, I want to talk to that guy, speak to the point the guy was making about the Muslim guy that was making comments.
You mean the 9/11 caller who was
9/11 caller?
Okay,
yes.
he was pretty outraged at the comedy. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, he was outraged at it, and my point was that, I mean, comedians make insensitive jokes all the time about a lot of different things. And there are Muslim Americans that live here and have their families here generations worth. I mean, just like anybody else, there are Asian people and Chinese people that were from Vietnam that live here, that fought in wars against this country but live here now. I mean, there's a lot of things. America is a melting pot. We have to understand that. And there's a lot of things that went on.
Is there a transplant that you can get for humor? Like, this guy, the joke went way over his head. Can he go to a hospital and get like a humor organ?
He was very sensitive about it because of 9/11, because of these things. And I get it. Sometimes comedians make jokes that kind of hit home to us, and they hurt. But that's a comedian. That's what they do. Now, it was obviously a joke. It was a joke because, obviously, a joke. The guy doesn't want to be a terrorist. He's a comedian. We're crying out loud.
And he was making jokes about the stereotype of people from Muslim countries being terrorists. I mean, it was a self-deprecating joke. It wasn't an angry joke.
Yeah. It was on him.
Right. I mean, I felt bad for the caller from 9/11 who was so freaked out. The 9/11 caller was
I mean, I understand his sensitivities, but I don't think he should have been as freaked out. And I think that, you know, sometimes we need to be able to, even at this such a tragic thing, we need to be able to laugh at ourselves. Because seriously, I mean, a lot of people are balled up too tight. And you need to release some. You need to be able to laugh at yourself. Some people don't find that funny and don't think it's a jokeable thing. I get that. I understand. I respect their position. But you go to a comedy club, you don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
everybody's not going to fit your brand.
There's no sacred cows at the comedy club, that's
exactly.
For sure.
Exactly.
All right,
everybody
Dwayne.
Everybody can catch it.
Dwayne,
everybody.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for the call. Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out. You too. And caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, I get that. I understand.
Caller, you got your... Yeah, you're listening to your radio. Caller, we may be out of luck for you. Sorry about that. Edward writes this, the threat of war with Iran is his trump card in case he needs to get out of jail free due to the Mueller investigation. That's Edward's email from cyberspace. A bunch of emails have come in. Somebody is warning that the possible war with Iran is like the Gulf of Tonkin repeat. Here's an email from the 352 area code that says, Dan has a very echo chamber view of conservatives. Most of us would be proud to have our son defend our country. That's from the 352 area code. And Tony writes this, anyone who has traveled within the last few years to Europe or many countries in Asia and comes back to the U.S. realizes how far behind we are now in basic public infrastructure. Even now in some Latin American countries, one sees the more progress, at least than in the U.S., of course. We spend far more on the military and weapons and military consultants than any other country does. Is there a connection, writes Tony, who's in St. Petersburg. Well, I'm Rob Lori. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. Coming up next, NOLA has a... an emergency at his apartment, so he won't be in today. Instead, we're going to, speaking of comedy, we're going to hear some comedy from the Jimmy Dore show. Jimmy Dore is probably the most hard-hitting political comedian out there who's not yet famous, but I think he's going to be famous someday. So stick around. The Jimmy Dore Show is coming up in the next hour right here on 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa.